Hello everyone, welcome to the Intel workshop on collective intelligence. I'm really glad to see all of you. My name is Maria Gavrishenko. I'm postdoctoral research in IT faculty, and I have two master degrees. One is artificial intelligence, the other one in mobile technology and business. And what I wanted to say that Intel IE Academy for Students, it has been created to work collaboratively with students at innovative schools and universities. They are doing really great job in deep learning and artificial intelligence. As a part of this program, Intel announced a student ambassador program for specifically artificial intelligence. This is really exciting program for university students to engage with Intel around the world in machine learning, deep learning, and artificial intelligence. I'm also an Intel student ambassador, and Intel has approved this project topic by granting financial support for this workshop. We will start our workshop with the presentation of COIN, Bridging Human and Machine Learning for the Needs of Collective Intelligent Development. This presentation will be made by Professor Vagan Terzian, who is the head of Collective Intelligence Research Group. And then there will be a presentation about Adaptive Vocabulary Learning Environment, which will be presented by me. Professor Ulla Richardson will tell us about GraphAgame. Then we will hear some comments, and then we will have some break for good food. And the most interesting part will be after, at the panel session, where we can discuss these topics with you and have some comments and some ideas. So I would like to ask Professor Vagan Terzian to present his really great work.
Okay. Nice to see all of you. Most of the faces are very familiar ones. So therefore, I was asked by this very beautiful student of me to provoke some discussion. So therefore, everything I will be talking is a provocative. The idea is that we want you to provide feedback. We really want you to see this kind of problem from many different angles, from different disciplines. Because things that I will be talking are just like part of my personal character, like I am the man who is crazy enough to think that I can change the world. So therefore, it's a type of presentation which really fits my profile. So if you don't know who I am a professor in distributed systems, but originally my education is such that even during students' years at Applied Mathematics Department, it was about 40 years ago. I already start to work with artificial intelligence problems. At that time, we have another computers, huge ones like this room, and everything was very different. But still, artificial intelligence was part of that kind of race of weapons between USSR and other world, and I was on the side of USSR at the time, and of course artificial intelligence was considered as a very strategic direction there. So from that time I have experience, and therefore I observe all the history of AI and can comment it somehow. So I was a creator of first departments of artificial intelligence in former Soviet Union, and also I had established several courses in various European universities, including this one. So finally I came here, and I believe it's a good place to start artificial intelligence, because in this particular building, the people believe that not only artificial intelligence, but also human can be very good additional, partner for artificial intelligence. And I start to think that probably yes. So let's discuss this topic together. So how the future of artificial intelligence is now considered if we take education as a subject of study? So what is the future of artificial intelligence in education? The most, you may observe it easily, the first thing which comes to our mind, because we are very egoistic ones, that, okay, how we can use artificial intelligence to develop or educate better human intelligence. So if I tell here to majority of teachers telling about artificial intelligence, they immediately check. They look at every tool thinking, okay, how I can use this tool to do something? So they are users of artificial intelligence. But I would like also to say and think and ask you to think about, so whether we can use human intelligence to develop or educate artificial intelligence. This is also important. Like, we must exchange our knowledge so we know how to educate humans, at least we believe so. So can we use this knowledge to educate artificial intelligence also? So therefore, these are kind of two processes. And in my opinion, only bridge between these two things is the future of artificial intelligence and education. And we call it, what can be the result of this kind of bridge? So-called collective intelligence, when there is some kind of mixture without clear even boundaries between human and machine, so that together they can solve really such things that group of best artificial intelligence entities cannot do, or best humans cannot do, but together they can provide some added value. So therefore, how to educate such kind of thing? As we all know, and those who visit my courses know that artificial intelligence is always about this kind of three major points. So first of all, it's always, if we talk about real intelligence, must be self-managed. Self-managed means that autonomous, knowing what it is doing, why it is doing. So somehow self-aware, very difficult topic, being, step by step, we are providing these kind of possibilities. And as many conferences in AI say, that we should be very careful exactly with this topic, because we must understand that one day we will lose control over autonomous intelligence. And then two other things. It's a kind of how this intelligence works, how it appears from experience. So either we may have top-down approach, which means that we use our knowledge and hard-code it somehow to the system, saying, okay, if it is artificial system which has our knowledge inside, so it's a kind of artificial intelligence. It's very traditional, old-fashioned, but still very important top-down approach. And currently, especially now, very popular because of deep learning, so-called bottom-up approach, when we are talking about intelligence that learns from observing environment. So it can observe different kind of facts and build or self-program its own intelligent skills. So these are three facets of artificial intelligence. Then all of you know, because I told you also in this in our courses, that one of the current shocking news from artificial intelligence is that the most intelligent games, which we all agree to be most intelligent, it's Go and chess, the best champions, human champions, are beaten by artificial intelligence. And currently, even we have such intelligence that from bottom up, from self-play, only for have 24 hours for self-learning, now overcome all available, I mean, the best available artificial intelligence chess player, so-called Alpha Zero from Google. So if we think from just compare these two approaches, because we really want also to think how to educate you students so that in 24 hours you may become at least that kind of world champion in certain profession. So where are these hidden opportunities? So what we can use? So let's first compare this, how these two different engines, that Stockfish, which was previous, I mean, human knowledge driven at Alpha Zero, fully self-learning, how they differ. So if we think about this top-down approach to artificial intelligence, so we have some domain, which is chess, which century, several centuries, let's say, we are collecting different kind of games, books, data from the best domain experts, best players. You see, there are a few my favorite world champions, and they created different kind of domain knowledge. They provide this kind of human capital in the books. Then there were AI experts, that kind of traditional artificial intelligence, the experts who take this knowledge and encode it in different kind of rules, heuristics, concrete programs, different kind of networks. So they provide some kind of formalization of this knowledge, and then this knowledge is being maintained, updated, because if the knowledge is formalized, you know that you can apply various kind of inference rules on top of this knowledge, and you can even infer something new. So that's how this kind of system like Stockfish works. So you may have updated knowledge after inference, and this updated knowledge is inside this Stockfish system. Alpha Zero does it much easier. So everything is done by Alpha Zero. So it considers the domain. Only what Alpha Zero knew in the very beginning, that the rules of the game. That's it. And it internally starts to generate various kind of games because of very sophisticated processors and big memory. It can generate really many games per minute, per hour, and it records which games end with which result, and somehow make so-called reinforcement learning, prizing or punishing these kind of internal players, because if you self-play, it means that you play for black and for white. So inside you imitate two players, and you depend on who wins in this kind of artificial game. Simple one in the very beginning. You price or punish particular one. So that all this kind of process is done by Alpha Zero, and it trains certain skills in choosing move in every new situation. And this is only 24 hours enough to overplay all these recorded centuries of information from best human experts. But isn't it so that in universities we are trained by that way? So we as humans, okay, we are given books. We go to libraries, we read them, we have some kind of, we believe, some kind of intelligence that create formal models of these things. We integrate different kind of information from different books, we infer new information, we make decisions. But are we capable of doing this kind of thing? Of course we are. There are some instincts, and some things we learn by this way. But do we have something like that in university education, facilitating the process of self-learning by this way? Okay, this picture I always worn, and because I am a believer that one day artificial intelligence will be stronger and may have, fit to different kind of professions. So humans must be smarter and smarter to compete on a labor market quite soon with artificial intelligence. So therefore, I suggest you, and you know that you already make the choice, but if someone of you didn't make the choice what to do in your life, then choose artificial intelligence as subject of your doing. Then you will be friend with artificial intelligence, and you'll find place in the labor market. Then also, I want to show you and say that there is huge paradigm change currently in everything. Because before, when you remember that kind of cloud computing concept, then we say that everything can be a service. And Internet of Things, Internet of Data, Internet of different kind of software, you can connect and use it as a service within your own application. So again, it was very egoistic view that paradigms is changing now because of artificial intelligence. So consider that now everything can be a user of service, not only service provider. Everything can be a customer. Everything, I mean, not only humans. So how to benefit from this kind of paradigm change? How to be beneficial? Just a few examples. I gave it at the lecture, but think about it. So if you are in a certain business, for example, real estate business, are you ready to have and sell appropriate products, not only for humans, but also for various kinds of software, robots, or agents? And what does it mean, home for agent, or home for autonomous system, or autonomous robot? How to design it? How to sell it? Another thing that all of us care about our health. Definitely there are diseases, problems. We all know especially when you go to these other courses related to deep learning and related to really software development, you notice how weak sometimes can be models. There might be different kind of sicknesses. How to fix the problems of artificial intelligence? Because we have healthcare for us, for humans. But what kind of healthcare and how it will look like would be needed for artificial intelligence? One of the most interesting things is that when we give certain autonomy to our artificial intelligence systems, it means that they can provide services and do them by their own skill. So they learn their own skill of doing some intelligent work, and they have right, I fully on that side, they have right to sell this skill. But if they sell something, how to make them holders of the property that they earn? Whether they have possibility to establish accounts in various banks, or are we using blockchain technology for these kind of skills? How they can collect money and, for example, buy additional skills? You know that software systems which are based on machine learning, they need, for example, new data sources to develop themselves. Whether they can buy access to these sources using their own decision, their own money, how to make them this possibility? So therefore, that's also big problem. Are we ready, if you are banker, to open accounts and give loans and serve also to software robots, not only for humans? What kind of laws we must have? What are consequences? But one benefit is immediate. So if robots can do some job and earn money, they can become taxpayers. So we don't have many people in Finland as a taxpayers. We all want, when we go to the pension age, that it will be enough young people working and making, paying taxes so that we can live. So maybe we must do artificial intelligence possibility to pay taxes for the autonomous work and autonomous business. They already can, but definitely will be in full scale providing near future. And now we come, of course, to educational services. But education was always subject in artificial intelligence, because we all know that you cannot do ready, good, intelligent system without learning phase. So we always need to train it. So we create some basic software as a child and train it to certain extent for certain capabilities. So this training period is needed. So therefore, if we as humans have some kind of educational services, we have a long history of structures like various levels of schools, now come to the universities and so on. Why there is nothing like that exist in machine learning? Why just simply it's like we have only training for machine learning inside families? So family is some kind of groups which use some software, develop it, and they train it for themselves. Why we humans get training not only inside families, but also outside families, in colleges, universities, schools, and so on. So assume that you are rector of a private, for example, private university or school. Are you ready to take and teach also software robots together with human students? For all these benefits, I'm talking about future societal benefits, they will be great taxpayers. They will be very good partners of humans in their jobs, especially in the groups, collective intelligence groups. So we need such kind of educated, for certain professions, educated staff. So should it be separately? As I know, I mean, the best partners usually trained in a similar or same even place. Because if you come from totally different places with totally different approaches to training, you need a long time to adapt to each other when you want to do your job. So this is a big question, and I'm absolutely sure the one who pilot this kind of idea, the concept, will get great advantage, because it's a lot of possibilities here also for patenting, licensing, and a lot of that kind of innovation stuff, because it's not easy to do. But usually, this first one gets everything. So what is my personal opinion? That's my personal quotas. I will just name them. So how to secure your future job, I already told you, from being replaced by artificial intelligence? They told you, just choose artificial intelligence to be your future job. If you want to have your private business, or you already have it, so how to secure your future business from threats? It's a lot of threats in the literature currently. Brought by the artificial intelligence. Again, just to choose artificial intelligence to be target of your investments. And then how to benefit from artificial intelligence by every day, instead of being worried about it, just wear artificial intelligence, like I wear this device, to be a good pocket friend and advisor always and everywhere with you. So what I mean, it will be great if you can educate, or if something which will be your personal advisor, one or five or 10, it can be several advisors around you, will be educated synchronously with you. So therefore, when you come to some university, it will be great if some artificial tools of same level of knowledge start developing together with you, and you know that they will be your partners when you come to job. Doesn't matter what kind of job, actually. It's not also job in artificial, in any subject. You can be journalist or writer of science fiction, or you can be everybody. If you use your intelligence to do your job, then your intelligence can be somehow enhanced by such kind of partners. But my message is that these partners must be trained in the best way together with you in similar places. So therefore, this kind of abstract concept, of course, it's not yet ready to say that, oh, it's right thing to do immediately. But still, we believe that University of Jyväskylä-Entyri can be the first university for artificial students. So that when any of you, like those who, for example, visit our Coin Master program, when you graduate not alone, with a couple of artificial friends, colleagues, and you go and make your job much better than any other without such trained colleagues. So this we call as a kind of interesting case for collective intelligence, because usually collective intelligence is taught first as a combination of many decision makers, artificial or human. But here we may be talking about such kind of team around one person. So the person is in the middle, like human intelligence, and several that kind of personal advisors, which are trained and clever and intelligent and even autonomous, and even capable of making their own business and pay taxes. By the way, we have managed to publish this idea recently from Deep Learning to Deep University. So you can check also this publication. It's a quite provoking and interesting one. Then a very important topic, which is somehow related to this, is so-called patented intelligence. That our idea, we call it PMind technology. The idea of patented intelligence is a possibility to train certain agent to make decisions very synchronously as you will be doing. Like to learn your way of making decisions and fully copy it. So if agent is trained to do like that, it means that you can leave him or create many clones of such agent and leave it in many places, which you cannot be right now. But he, you may be sure, you will not worry, that he will do things according to your way of doing while you are away. And we already show how to use this kind of idea for cloning human decision models for Industry 4.0, and we managed to publish it also quite recently. You can also check this, because all the slides, of course, will be available for you. Then we also investigated the vulnerabilities of artificial intelligence, and they are very different from human ones. And I told you already that artificial intelligence have certain type of diseases which are very different from humans, so we cannot even estimate that it might happen. So it is possible to attack artificial intelligence systems. And the most vulnerable place is education process. Because all the other stuff of cybersecurity, so you can make very secure a platform, you can secure your software from being hacked, but very difficult to secure the education process. Like when you give your child possibility to go to school, you cannot control anymore. Are they good teachers? Are they giving right things to him? So what kind of models will appear at the end? So this kind of common things right now, so-called cognitive hacking, data poisoning, data evasion attacks, they're very vulnerable artificial intelligence, and we invented that kind of idea of vaccinating artificial intelligence. to make immunity system for them. And we also managed to publish this kind of idea, and we continue it as also project funded by NATO. But this is just want to say that adversarial learning is also important part of education. We just discussed today with Alexei briefly that the idea is that not only you need the clone which makes things exactly as you want to do, you need also to educate your personal opponent, the person, artificial person, which always challenge you, giving totally different opinion to yours and collecting facts, that you at least aware that, okay, you choose this one, but you must observe other options, argumented ones, when you make a decision, it's a very important one. So it's very good to have, sometimes we, we fight, like if I feel bad doing bad things, but why I'm feeling bad? Because inside me there is kind of bad guy who say that this was wrong, and because of that, that, and that, and I feel bad. So it's always not only something in me who supports my opinion, but something which always opposes it. So that was I'm talking that when you create collective intelligence, it's good to have guys from two teams. And adversarial learning is very important part of collaborative decision making in these kind of cases. Then all of you know, at least those who visit my courses, that we have a master program with the same name, collective intelligence and cognitive computing. And the idea that we really want to use this master program as a first pilot, at least one day we will do it, the first pilot of that kind of approach, that students and some software will be trained synchronously so that you can take this software together with you to your job. But the software will be capable to be coordinated with you, to collaborate, communicate, and other things which is necessary. I will leave this, I will not put much attention to this. There are a few slides saying that why robots are the best employees. There is one opinion from the literature. Why robots especially make the best teachers, there is another opinion. And why robots make the best students. Just a few opinions. But for me, it's important that as a small summary that we must realize that we are not only unique users of software robots anymore. We also must think how we can, what kind of services we can provide for them. So therefore, that was important thing that I want to challenge and discuss. So instead of, this is in this building, you can hear a lot of such kind of questions from people. How I can make artificial intelligence beneficial for me? So how I can use, how I can benefit from artificial intelligence? And I believe, at least for you who are trained for artificial intelligence, it must not be a subject. We don't care. What we care, it's how to make ourselves to be beneficial for the artificial intelligence, how we can update it, what we can do for it. Not only, that's less important. Also, I want to say that future autonomous system will be combination of bottom-up and top-down approach. I'm absolutely sure that if we combine somehow, find the bridge, find such model, really very abstract one, that can combine systems like Stockfish with systems like AlphaGo or AlphaZero together, it's been bottom-up and top-down approach, then we really have very sophisticated and great artificial intelligence, which together with that kind of self-managed or autonomous properties can do everything we really want it to do. It doesn't mean that we need it, but artificial intelligence have right to do things better than human and maybe one day replace humans as a decision makers. All you know that there is a very specific mathematical way to train current artificial intelligence, if we are talking about neural networks, it's so-called backpropagation. It's a very specific, very mathematical thing. And if I think about, is it possible for me to use backpropagation to train your brain better somehow inside university? It's a big problem. So what kind of hints from training neural networks I can use to improve the pedagogical process towards humans? It's a very interesting topic. And as you know, in machine learning, we are looking for best configuration of neural network. It's a terribly complicated task. And we really need some kind of automation of this thing. And I just think whether humans inside our brain unconsciously have that kind of system which automate for us the best way to search for architecture of some decision models. So I will come to the end, to the end of the story, just what for I was talking. We just started some initiative within our master program, and we currently submit application to Academia of Finland, that we want to make the first small step towards that vision of university for everything. And in this case, we want to create some kind of collaborative learning environment where humans and various kind of software can be trained together. And we need to somehow find a way to bridge the gap between human learning and machine learning so that the result or impact or learning outcome would be that kind of collective intelligence, as I was talking, like human and some supportive intelligence around him or her. There are a few research questions, on our opinion, evident, and I believe that you can add something from your own experience during today's discussion. So first the question is, which of the machine learning techniques would be reasonable to apply also for human education? And how? The second question is, which of the human learning techniques would be reasonable to apply also for artificial intelligence? Or for machine learning? And how? And the third one, what would be a suitable integrated collection of human learning techniques and machine learning techniques together for training collective intelligence or groups of humans and artificial intelligence systems? So therefore, I just ask you to take part in that kind of discussion. So if you're brave enough to take challenge, then you can join our team anytime, join our master program if you're not yet in it, or join our research activity. So all links are provided for that kind of thing here. So that's everything I wanted to tell as a background or bigger picture, as a context for future discussions today. Okay? Thank you. That's nonsense.
Thank you so much for your presentation. I would like to talk about my topic, which is adaptive vocabulary learning environment. I was making a research related to this topic during my PhD, so I think it's really interesting one, and it is related to the COINS objectives. This project has been published as Intel DevMesh project. You can find it with this link. And Intel said really positive, provide really positive opinion about this work. So they really wanted to expose this work to more developers in community and spread the word about this research. So I will start from the problem description. We'll say a bit about adaptive learning system, what they are, what kind of solution we proposed, describe the system, its architecture, then conclusions and future work. The focus of this work is in the area of facilitation learning techniques for children with an early language delay. So in the literature, those children are often named as late talkers. And these late talkers are a group of children who learn to form sentences later than their peers, and they have like a smaller vocabulary. Their peers, for example, at 2 years start forming, like putting words together and forming some sentences. A very recent findings reveal that if such an early language delay comprises receptive language, such children will face serious difficulties in becoming fully literate. And in some literature, authors said that many late talkers catch up with their peers, but some still continue with slower learning pace and are later considered to have a specific language impairment. So as a result, we are allowed to conclude that these children require more attention, more personalization during their learning process. And the personalization should allow them to learn with their own pace and keep their attention. And it also should support them in forming the associative connections in their vocabulary in order to create better understanding and categorization. So we know that every child is different and learns with different paces and strategies. And information technology has long been seen as cost-efficient solution for meeting the student's individual in needs in learning. So while mLearning and game-based learning have proven their benefits in helping children with learning difficulties, there is still not much done for the target group of late talkers in vocabulary learning. So the aim of this research was to provide children who have an early language delay with an adaptive way to train their vocabulary, taking into account individuality of each learner. So now I would like to tell more about adaptive learning systems. It is known that learning is empowered when the instructions are given to learner in the personalized manner. So this knowledge and background theories of education have been a decade's lasting trend in creating technologically enhanced learning environments, which can adapt one way or another to the learning needs. So adaptive learning is a methodology centered on creating learning experience that is unique for every individual learner through the intervention of computer software. And it allows organizing content, identifying the way to learn according to learners' knowledge, use assessment results to provide personalized feedback to each learner. Earlier research indicated that adaptive learning systems could be divided by according their types, technologies, methods for building those systems, and their features. So there are two types of adaptive learning system. We know simple adaptive learning system, they based on rules and are context-oriented, and algorithm-based adaptive systems, which are based on advanced mathematical formulas and machine learning concepts. And they consider more complex. And there are two main technologies, adaptive hypermedia systems, which includes adaptive presentation and adaptive navigation, and as well intelligent tutoring systems, which includes curriculum sequencing, intelligent solution analysis, and problem-solving support. There are a few main features which adaptive learning system has. It is pre-test when the system begins with assessment of current knowledge and skills, then pacing and control where the learner has control over certain aspects of the system, feedback and assessment when the system evaluates learner's progress and gives feedback according to his her performance, progress tracking and reports when the system can save the user's profile with their progress and user can take up where he or she left off, and as well motivation and reward when the system includes gamification elements to motivate and to have their user stayed engaged. So, finding optimal way to present concepts to children during the first years of life might benefit in diminishing their risk to develop difficulties in language learning. So we assume that it is harder to recognize some particular concept among several other similar ones. We're thinking about making an adaptive learning system which will take into account personal qualities of learners in their perception of a concept. So the system will learn and build a personal model of a learner based on his her answers while changing the complexity of concepts representation, and will apply model for further facilitation of learning process. Our system used this graphogame functionality, and about graphogame, Professor Ulla Richardson will tell more. And we used three concept similarity measures, so visual similarity, phonetic similarity, and semantic similarity. So visual similarity, it's like a shape of presented object, color distribution, brightness, contrast, etc. And there are a few different methods how to measure this visual similarity. For example, Euclidean distance, Tangent distance, etc. Phonetic similarity is automated voice and speech recognition, string-based similarity of phonetic transcriptions. And there are also different methods how to measure this phonetic similarity, like edit distance, gyro-Winkel measures, and etc. Semantic similarity is a similarity based on domain ontology. It has like this H-counting method, breadth-first search, feature-based measures, combined measures, and for the domain of animals could be biological, species-based, geolocation-based, domestication-based classification. And in our work, we used Euclidean distance, Levenstein, and breadth-first search. So this is the architecture of the system. So the aim of it, how to provide children with an adaptive way to train their vocabulary, taking into account individually of the learner, And the assumption was the more similar the concept, in our case, words, and we used animals, are the harder recognition task is. So based on calculated similarity measures between all the concepts and the chosen one, which is a random concept on the picture, we rank them and select a group of closest to the defined delta value. So the initial delta value could be considered, for example, as an average of similarity values of all measured concepts, depending on the amount of destruction items, since their amount also influence the overall complexity. System chooses the concept with similarity value closest to the value of delta. And depending on the user's feedback answers, of course, the value of delta will be changed in the feedback analysis model. And if a user makes a mistake and provides wrong answer, the delta value will be increased, moved to the side of the concept with lower similarity. Otherwise, complexity could be increased. By decreasing value, a group of more similar concepts will be selected next time. By manipulating coefficients of visual, phonetic, and semantic factor influence, we are able to recognize levels of difficulty then that are individual factors bring for a particular learner. Once user provide a wrong answer, next time when the same concept will be chosen, the algorithm will change vector of weights, giving more preferences to one of the factors. And therefore, system will collect statistics on personal learning model of the user while trying to already personalize complexity of the tasks. So for now, we made a pilot game, which is taking into account right now only semantic similarities of the words, and it is like it is presented as a game-based learning environment with the name AdaptTalk. On the right side, it is filtering process. So children should, on the first stage, we have to filter the words which child already knows. So if he or she answers correctly, then the system is not adding those words to the learning stage. We can see on the picture that, we cannot hear the voice, but the system is asking child, where is the this anteater? And you can see that this concept is shown among this frog and crocodile and everything. So only this anteater is from the mammals. So it's kind of really far from other class of animals. The same we can see on the picture where the learning stage, where the system is asking where is the leopard. And we also see it is shown almost among not mammals like frog, shark, and etc. So we believe, that the it will help to learn better the words for children. So in this work, we were concentrated on developing adaptive vocabulary learning system for late talkers who have difficulties in learning language due to individual reasons. And this system is mobile learning application, which aims to provide optimal way of a vocabulary presentation for young children. Of course, it needs to be improved and tested more in future. So in addition to using the information of learners' mistake in the system's adaptation, the data is collected and further analyzed from angles of semantic network connectivity, emphasizes of dimensions, and overall systems education efficiency. And our approach has the advantage of not only impartially, but automaticity. Of course, we would like to include this in the system so we could change the level of complexity for each children. And this makes possible to collect larger amount of data with less effort and bias. Of course, there are disadvantages in the methodology. The system does not require children to form the words, only to recognize them, and therefore it cannot be considered as the way of training word composition. Also, it is likely that all the children's answers are not equally valuable, since multiple choices questions can be answered randomly and also wrong answers could be given. To evaluate the system's efficiency, it would be tested with a group of children consisting of both 1 to 3 years old, late talkers, and other children with more typical language proficiency. Gathered association networks can be further used as a base for algorithm instead of the adult mind ontologies. We will extend the knowledge base, including also other domains of vocabulary, and the algorithm could be extended to consider several users' feedback, which could be used to form more reliable users' model. Applied to a larger set and multiple vocabulary domains, analysis of children's answers in the system can result in valuable information of children's semantic networks. The system could be also modified to be more intuitive and motivating. And, of course, the same learning techniques will be applied using neural networks within the COIN project, which Terzian was talking about. Here are published articles according to this topic, references. And thank you so much for your attention. I would like Professor Ulla Richardson to tell more about this grapho game, which was the basis for this idea, actually. Thank you.
Okay. Hello, I'm Ulla Richardson. and I'm here to talk about GraphLearn. We used to call it GraphGame, but since the it's been commercialized and the company now owns the rights to use the name GraphGame, we use GraphLearn here in the university for research purposes. So my background is in linguistics, and I've been working in multidisciplinary research groups for 15 years now. And I run this, I head this GraphLearn team here in Jyväskylä University, and then we have also international collaborations. And so we have many different projects and many different game versions, though that there's not just one game called GraphLearn. There's lots of different variations because we use it for research purposes. So we have different research questions, and therefore we build different kind of games. But it's sort of the so it's a research tool as such. And currently, I'm running a project called All Read, and we have people from psychology, education, special education, linguistics, IT, and the statistician, psychology, education, okay, and graphic designer. So different people in there. So GraphLearn is an adaptive learning method, and it's for learning to read, basic reading skills. And this is just a background that why reading skills. Reading skills are quite essential today in this world of ours. We learn quite a lot of things through a written language. And for some reasons, some people just find it very difficult to learn to read. Or they learn to read, but very slowly, and they struggle in their skills. And it's very effortful. And they probably try to avoid reading as much as possible and do other things. So we think early support is important, and this is why we build this game, GraphLearn. So it's a serious game, and it's a digital educational tool for supporting reading development, as I said. And it's based on scientific evidence. It's, whatever we develop and design, we also do research on it, how effective it is. And it's also developed by researchers with 25 years of history in reading development. I myself have done my PhD on infants, 6 months of age, in speech perception, who were children of parents who had dyslexia, really severe difficulties in learning to read. And we have followed those children for 25 years now. It's a longitudinal study, and we have gained lots of information. What is the problem there with reading difficulties? And I can say that we don't know what it is. Well, we do know several things, that the speech perception problems, some people have more visual problems, some have sort of attentional problems, memory problems, lots of different things. So we're dealing with humans who have their sort of learning difficulty manifests in a certain way. They just cannot learn to read in the same speed as the typically learning children can. So they have something different in their, it's a, so the neuro, something in their brains, let's say that, is different. It's different, there's nothing wrong with it. They completely, so that if you measure the intelligence is exactly the same or even better than in typically developing children. But there's something that they perceive differently, or they build representations of speech differently, which is then reflected in their, when they're starting to learn a different mode of communication, which is written language. So they connect it. So we're using all this information that we have gained over years of learning difficulties. And in order to know something about learning difficulties, we need to know the typical learners. What do they do? So that we compare what is normal, what is not normal. So what I'm trying to build a picture here is it's a complex, learner is a complex thing. It's sort of, you know, they're learning, for instance, letter-sound connections. It's knowledge. These are the letters, these are the sounds for them. But then they have to develop the skill. And dyslexia is more like a performance deficiency. They know the tools, but they don't know how to use it. And we try to figure out how to help those children early enough. So in Finland, it's called Ekapeli, and we have lots of players so far because they've been using it since 2006 or 2005. So how it works typically is that they hear a sound, and then they have to select a corresponding letter or syllable or word, and then they learn to read. So, for instance, here it says, select the correct one. It's very implicit, and that it's a game-like thing. Okay, they have to just select something that corresponds to the correct, and it always gives the correct answer, even if you make a mistake. So you always get the representation, okay, this sound is always corresponded with that written symbol. So it teaches you, so it's dynamic in that way. And also the game is sort of adaptive that is individually provides the type of material that we think is correct for their learning level at that time, so that they is sort of 80% correct and 20% things that we think that they cannot do at that stage. So it's challenging enough, but not too challenging, especially for children who find it difficult to learn to read, because they do get the negative feedback at school or parents or wherever that you're poor at the skill. So it's a game which we have lots of different mini games, and where we, in different graphical context, we teach the same ideas. So repetition is one of the things in the game. But repetition is not just the same, you know, you don't have to learn the same word, but all the words. You have to learn the system, the phenomena of the language. You know, different onsets, end of the word, in the middle of the word, in different connections. So it looks quite simple on the surface. It's quite complicated at the background, really. So it's fun, game-like training environment. So we don't tell that this is you learn to read in this game. It's just they play the game at school or at home. And importantly, we try to give them positive feedback and rather than constant sort of negative feedback, which teachers might even give you. Even if, you know, teachers might be doing that. Okay, let's do this. And if the child makes an incorrect answer all the time or gives an incorrect answer, the teacher's face or behavior might say, okay, didn't quite get it, did you? Try to do it again, even if they don't want to do it. So it's this kind of machine gives much more sort of the feedback that it doesn't provide those feelings, emotions. Saying that, where I would like to go, which we are not yet, is that I would like to have a system that recognizes the feelings of a player. Because feedback is very important in learning to read. Motivation is very important. Because you could, okay, I don't know I don't know how to do this. I go and do something else. I play Angry Birds or whatever. Why would I play this? And I would like to have a system where face recognition, whatever, that will tell that this person at this stage needs this kind of feedback. We've done different kind of studies where we find that giving realistic information of the skills at that stage is better than giving very positives. Sort of, you're doing really great, even if you haven't done really great. But being realistic in the feedback is important. But also, I think that it's much more complex. It's sort of, today, I don't feel like playing. Today, I don't want to do something like this. But sometimes, yes, give me something. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I have to try harder, be more persistent. There are different ways of reacting to challenges. And I think that's something that we haven't figured out yet, but I would like the system to figure out that thing as well. So I probably have still time. So we have scientific evidence because we do research. We the whole game is based on basic research, which is very important. Different kind of findings. We put all that those findings and try to use the results of studies into our system. And then we do this applied studies, and then we try it out in the intervention studies to see if it's actually effective, what is effective and what is not effective. What we have found is that, for instance, that if a teacher uses gives a special education lesson to a child, it's fine. They do it really well. But if they give it with our game, it's even much better. And even alone, we have found the game alone is quite effective as well. So, and what I would like to say is that the effect sizes of the what we have in the small case studies have shown that this system of ours is at least double as effective as systems that we think are effective reading instruction so far. So, and what the game stores lot the accuracy and response times, everything that you do. That this information can be given to the players and teachers, and they can use it so that they can see where they've learned, what they've learned and what they haven't learned. This is very important for the self-efficacy, for children's self-beliefs. Can I do something? Am I improving? And that kind of things. And teachers like to just see that, how children are progressing. So, we started in Finland, we have Finnish games, and now we have lots of different languages as well in our games. We have lots of game blogs. Yes, if you're just learning letter sound correspondences, it takes only 6 hours or less than 6 hours, sometimes 1 hour to learn those things, actually learn completely. So we think we can provide sort of fast track to reading. And this is the world, and this is where we are at the moment. We have different language versions. All of these have been studied. The efficacy has been sort of proven in the scientific studies. And this is interesting because I'm clicking here. There it goes. So we could not do this by ourselves. So we have a network of different experts in the world who know about the language, the written language, how it connects to the spoken language, because the systems are different. So we know in English, the spoken language connection to written English, not very consistent. You know, if you think about one letter, how is it pronounced in English in every connection, in every context? You can't just find many sounds that would be always the same. So we have to take into account the connections of written language to the spoken language. And we start usually from the most consistent and most frequent connections in the game and move on from there to more infrequent and more inconsistent things. Okay, not doing actually bad. I just don't know what's in the slide because I just did this a little while ago. So at the moment we have all reading project, which is a project where we think that we started from those who have real difficulties in learning to read. And as I said, we need to know those who do not have difficulties in learning to read in order to know what is the skill. It's, reading is a really complex activity. It's very interactive. You need to be active. Language, I'm linked. Is communicative things. You have to interpret. It's not just knowledge of, like, numbers or something, or letters. If I know the letters, then I know everything. It's a text. You're reading for meaning. You don't just read letters. You don't read the little bits. You need to understand in this context what does this mean. So it's quite complex. And to learn that, especially if you have very little experience with written text, You have to go through that. Okay, this is an informative text. This is more argumentative text. This is completely fantasy and that kind of thing. And you need to learn all those things. By reading, you will gain that information. But if you haven't got much experience with reading and you try to avoid reading as much as possible, then someone has to sort of teach you this. And in the game, as I said first, it's quite implicit. But since it's adaptive, if the system, the learning system within the game finds that the child has problem with something, then it provides more of those items that it has problems with. And if that still doesn't go through, in a way, they don't learn the items, then we provide more explicit instructions. Okay, if this is connected to this in this order, this is what comes out of that, you know, that we explicitly show the process that we usually, typically learning children and people, know how to solve the problem. But we have to teach these children how to solve that problem because they haven't got the tools for that. So what we're doing now in this ORID project is we've got a Swiss group and a Finnish group, and we're doing a game from preschoolers to third or fourth grade children. One game. And there's an assessment at the beginning where it's a dynamic assessment. It's sort of, if something's too difficult, it stops assessing that and goes to something different. And it assesses and then places a child to a certain place in the game according to their skills. So the training material is appropriate for that skill level. It doesn't. It's like typically in school, the first graders do this, second graders do that, whatever. This just takes that all readers are the same. They have the skill, and that is put in the correct place in the game. And in the game, it just moves on from that. It has another assessment, and then moves to a different place, so that it tries to find the appropriate challenge level for that child. Since in Finland the game is available for everyone for free, and so we get lots of information. We can do large-scale studies. We everything's stored. We have plenty of information, so we can learn about the learning process in different type of learners. We are at the very start of that. There's millions of things to do. I've been doing this, as I said, about 13 years, and I think I've got about 100 years ahead of me still before we learn anything at all. So, we do small-scale sort of experimental studies as well as large-scale intervention-based studies. And that's it, probably. Okay, that's the end. Thank you. Yes.
So you mentioned that you have a pretty big log file of experience of how the children use the game and actually the learning process. Are you utilizing those logs?
Are we utilizing them? Yeah.
Yes. So do you analyze to improve or get the insights?
We are doing. That's the log base here, and are we doing it this much at the moment? We are at the moment looking at the Finnish data only and letter sound connections, which is just a small part of the language. And we're just building first of all, we have a confusing, what's confused with what, and have a sort of bigger picture of that. And what we've learned from the game logs is that what I would have known some of it without any of this information is that phonetically similar things are sort of difficult to sort of make, you know, which is if M and N, they're similar, they're confused. But also some visual problems as well, and some really strange with some children, and those things are the interesting. Why are they confusing those particular?
Yeah, I believe there are a lot of information that is not yet kind of available for us. So we have some knowledge, some basic knowledge. What might be similar, what might be different, but the reality is different.
Yes, yeah, and that's the interesting part. That's where we find new information, which will take us further. Yeah. So, but anyone is welcome to go and do anything they want with the game logs. Yeah.
Of the user. Of course, there are a lot of tools nowadays that can tell you whether the person is sad or happy or whatever, but I believe that so you can start with this, of course, but I believe for your particular purpose you need more specific classification of the emotion, which is relevant, which is correlated with the goals
Yes.
of the game.
Yeah.
And therefore, it might be not that utilize the general purpose classifiers, but it's better to train specific task specific model. And of course, for this, if we utilize the deep learning techniques, we need the labeling data. So there is a question: either this should be labeled by the experts, by the people who observe the children, and like label. So at this point, the child has that or that emotion or whatever. But of course, it's somewhat automated. I mean, if we just constantly will capture the face, and we will also automatically capture some contextual information, like the activity.
In that,
So then we can associate with those and even to generate the clusters, the classes, if you don't know them in advance.
Yeah.
I mean, there are ways how.
I like to hear that, yes. Thank you.
This has been an interesting combination, so if I start with